Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Danielle Lazarova and we begin with the news. President Václav Klaus met with US President George Bush at the White House on Tuesday. The meeting lasted around 35 minutes and President Klaus later described it as friendly and positive. The two leaders discussed transatlantic priorities, the situation in the Middle East, security issues, as well as bilateral ties and the Czech government crisis. It was President Klaus's first bilateral meeting with a US leader since taking office 2 years ago. Commentators say it marks the end of a period of distinctly cool relations between the two statesmen, widely attributed to Mr. Klaus's opposition to the war in Iraq. President Klaus is on a working visit to the United States, promoting his book on the Czech Republic's journey from communism to a free society. Prime Minister Stanislav Gross has said he sees no reason for the government to initiate a vote of confidence in Parliament following the protracted government crisis. After a meeting with senior party officials, Mr. Gross told journalists that his cabinet was fully functional and capable of meeting the challenges ahead. The Prime Minister also reiterated his intention to run for the post of party chairman at the upcoming party conference in March. Mr. Gross told journalists he was not considering leaving either of his posts, party chairman or Prime Minister. The ruling Social Democrats have been under pressure to ask Parliament for a vote of confidence and to choose a new party leader at their March conference. Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda of the Christian Democrats has ruled out a possible rift in his party in connection with the government crisis which brought the cabinet to the brink of collapse. Mr. Svoboda was responding to a statement made by the Social Democrat deputy chairman Zdeněk Škromach, who told the Daily Pravo that if the Christian Democratic Party mounted another offensive against the Prime Minister, then Christian Democrat ministers who remained loyal to the Gross government would not be asked to leave their posts. Minister Svoboda said that whatever happened, the Christian Democratic Party would act as one man. More house owners have decided to file a complaint against the Czech Republic with the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg over the regulation of rents. Czech house owners claim that the current regulated rents do not enable them to cover even the cost of maintenance of their property. They want rents to be raised to at least 49 crowns per square meter per month. The Association of House Owners has welcomed the verdict of the European Court of Human Rights, which in February issued a ruling in favor of Polish house owners who had a similar complaint. The court ruled that while rents could be regulated, it should not be at the expense of house owners. You are tuned to Radio Prague and I'm Daniela Lazarova. Czech President Václav Klaus meets President Bush at the White House in what is being described as his biggest diplomatic success. A conference on women's rights in Prague brought together women from all walks of life will be looking at the main concerns. What's wrong with General Patton's statue? A controversy that could disrupt the end of the war celebrations in Pilsen. And fighting to keep your home, a tale of two Czech villages. That and more coming up. Please stay with us. The Czech President Václav Klaus held his first meeting with US President George Bush at the White House on Tuesday. The visit, announced just one day in advance, is seen as a real success for Mr. Klaus, who was in Washington's bad books for some time over his stance on the Iraq War. Iraq was just one of many issues discussed by the two presidents in what Mr. Klaus described as very friendly talks. Ian Willoughby reports.
I think that the relations between the Czech Republic and the United States are very, very positive, and this meeting was just the confirmation of that.
Václav Klaus speaking as snow fell on the White House lawn on Tuesday. It had taken the Czech president a full 2 years to get there, after he angered Washington by questioning the war against Iraq. Mr. Klaus, describing relations between himself and the U.S. president as friendly and pleasant, played down that dispute, which he described as definitely over and done with. He also said the whole thing had been very much demonizovano, meaning demonized. But Iraq was one of the main issues discussed by the two men, with George Bush keen to hear that the Czech Republic, unlike some European countries, wasn't planning to change its policy and withdraw its troops. The Czech president reassured him on this point, saying Czech soldiers would continue to train Iraqi police officers. Iran, Syria and security in the Middle East were also on the agenda during Tuesday's talks. But one subject which would have perhaps been of more interest to many in the Czech Republic, if and when Washington will drop visa requirements for Czechs travelling to the US, didn't come up. 2 weeks ago, when Messrs. Klaus and Bush met in Brussels, the former surprised many by saying the US president had asked about the political crisis in the Czech Republic, where the government has been shaken by financial scandal. Again on Tuesday, George Bush raised the matter and was curious to know why Václav Klaus didn't just call early elections. Mr. Klaus explained that the Czech constitution precluded such a move. Václav Klaus's meeting at the Oval Office was described as a working visit, coming as it did during a tour to promote his book On the Road to Democracy. But even though it wasn't on the level of official state visit, it is being seen as a real triumph for the Czech president. One newspaper, Mladá fronta DNES, described it as his greatest diplomatic success. Mr. Klaus pointed out to that daily that the meeting had lasted almost 40 minutes, though it had only been scheduled to last half an hour. That would seem to indicate how much meeting Mr. Bush at the White House meant to him personally.
Ian Willoughby, thanks for that. Well, as you probably know, March the 8th was International Women's Day. This year, women from around the Czech Republic and abroad gathered for a conference in Prague. A variety of topics were discussed, ranging from the lack of women in politics to the role of the European Union in promoting gender equality. Nikola Brabinek was there.
To kick off the conference, Michaela Marx-Stominová, the head of the Czech Labour Ministry's Department for Family Affairs and Social Policy, addressed the negative connotations that sometimes accompany International Women's Day in the Czech Republic.
International Women's Day is still perceived as something which has a connection to the communist times, because communists used this International Women's Day for their ideology. And I tried to explain that the history of International Women's Day reaches the beginning of 20th century. Of course, the day shouldn't be celebrated as communists did, which meant that men got drunk and women were given flowers, but that it should be organized as a commemoration of past and recent violation of women's rights.
I asked Mrs. Marx-Stominová what she saw as major issues facing women in the post-communist countries.
First of all, the discrimination on the labor market, because since the early 90s, the salary gap increases, or it increased until 2000, now it stopped somehow. The other thing is that the unemployment of women increases, and again, the gap between men and women within unemployment increases. The other problem I see in not enough women being in the decision-making processes.
Lack of political participation was a central topic of discussion. Senator Alena Gajdúšková noted that women's political participation did not reflect the proportion of men and women in the population at all.
When we look at the numbers in the Parliament of the Czech Republic, women make up 15%, and in the government there are even less. There is not a single woman regional governor. All 14 regions have a man as their head.
Senator Gajdúšková spoke about raising women's confidence and improving conditions so that politics would be more accessible to women. I was curious to know how she herself balanced the demands of family and politics.
I am married and have two full-grown daughters, so I don't have that problem anymore. I can put all my time into politics now. I worked in politics for a long time when the children were little, and we simply had to share the time with my husband.
Lenka Semerska, the coordinator of the Women's Networking Support Program, spoke about the problems faced by women in former communist countries in an international context. I asked her if joining the EU had improved the lives of women in the former Eastern Bloc.
women still live their same lives and not very many things changed for them. But what's different is the legal mechanisms that they can use and the allies that they have in their struggle for equal rights and gender equality. Because European Union has established institutions and legal mechanisms to secure equal position of women and men and equal opportunities. So these are the very good gains that we got after joining European Union. But I'm afraid that most of the women living in the new member states are not much aware about these things that they are being available to them.
At the conference, the concept of gender mainstreaming was widely discussed. This strategy means applying gender analysis and policy to all levels of government. Monica Silvell from the Swedish Ministry of Industry and Employment explained how gender mainstreaming was being applied in her country. I asked her what was needed to implement the strategy with success.
First one, and the most important, is that you need a political will. You must have the politicians and the government saying that this is an important thing to do. And the second is that you need knowledge in gender equality, but you also need knowledge, of course, in the special policy area that you're going to implement with the gender perspective.
Nicola Brobinick with that report. American General George Smith Patton was a key figure in the Second World War. His name is bound up especially with the liberation of Western Czechoslovakia. Between the 5th and the 8th of May of 1945, his forces were responsible for liberating the city of Plzeň. To honour the 60th anniversary of this event, the Plzeň authorities have commissioned a statue of the general. But now they are in turmoil, as the sculptor they've chosen to design it doesn't quite fit the mould. Rosie Johnson has more.
Plans to sculpt a Patton memorial for the 60th anniversary of Plzeň's liberation were originally unveiled 2 years ago. Jaroslav Bocher, a local sculptor whose works are already on display in the town square, was chosen to design the statue. Money was raised by members of the public and the local military club, with the town council also donating a large sum. But now the authorities have withdrawn their support for reasons that council employee Vladimir Palek explains.
In my opinion, there is a problem with authors, Mr. Bocher's past, because during the communist regime, Mr. Bocher collaborated with communist governmental secret police, and this is a problem for many people in city parliament, let's say.
The sculptor, Jaroslav Bocher, defends himself against such allegations.
People started saying that I had collaborated with the Secret Service during the communist times. I was pressurized into this under the last regime. In fact, I was persecuted. I was never a communist. I always supported Western Europe and American culture. Things were very difficult for me. I tried to emigrate to the West several times, but I never had the courage to stay there. When I came back, I was held by the police, charged with trying to emigrate and for conspiring with other emigrants against the regime.
All this comes at a time when the statue is near completion and the keystone lies bare in front of the town's House of Culture. Jaroslav Bocher has been working on the project in good faith that it would be paid for, but as he didn't enter into any contract, he's now nearly ½ a million crowns out of pocket. He's considered selling the 2.7-metre-high statue to a Slovak museum, or alternatively just pitching it in his garden, which fortunately is large. While the town council is firmly opposed to the statue, writing in a press release that they will strive towards realising a memorial on clearer and more transparent terms, others involved in the project want the statue to go on display. Vladimir Palek again.
The military club still want to realise it, but I'm not sure they can do that.
The unveiling of the statue was planned for May. American war veterans were to fly over for the occasion. They too have asked the council to go ahead with the project, but as of yet to no avail. Come the day of the celebrations, it may well be that Pilsen roars and brings forth a slab.
Rosie Johnson, thank you, and let's hope it doesn't come to that. Now we stay in the western part of the country for a story that's made headlines here in the Czech Republic. Winter is still holding the country firmly in its grip, but the town of Blaná on the Czech Republic's western border has good reason to believe that spring is just around the corner. The first harbinger of spring, the white stork, has just arrived back from the shores of Africa and set up home in the best stork's nest in town. His arrival has caused plenty of concern among the locals, who fear that he has little chance of survival in the harsh winter conditions. Following emergency consultations, a fire crew was called to the old factory chimney to make a home delivery of frogs and mice, the stork's welcome home meal. The locals are now watching the weather reports with even greater interest, and since meteorologists predict that the weather is not going to improve until the end of March, the town's inhabitants are determined to keep up the food deliveries until a thaw enables the stork to take care of itself. Luckily, they won't need to search for frogs and mice. Ornithologists have advised them that bits of fish and chicken will do just as well. As for the stork, he or she seems perfectly happy with the arrangement and spends much of his time posing for TV cameramen and newspaper journalists. In this case, the early bird really did get the worm. The only thing that worries the locals is that the stork did not really arrive early. He arrived at exactly the same time as last year, which means that others are on the way, and if the weather does not change soon, the fire crew will be kept busy all day making special lunch deliveries. A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, coming your way from the Czech Republic here in Central Europe. For this week's Czechs Today, Dieter Asiedu headed for North Bohemia, where the residents of two villages are fighting to keep their homes.
And thanks for staying tuned to this edition of Czechs Today. And I'm currently at the beautiful and romantic North Bohemian Baroque Chateau of Jezeří. It's about a two-hour drive away from Prague and is actually a former medieval castle that was rebuilt into a Renaissance chateau in the 16th century and then once again after a fire in the 18th century. Jezeří lies on the wooded southern slopes of the beautiful Krušné hory, or Krušné hory mountains, but instead of overlooking the ancient park that once stretched out for miles below, the chateau is on the edge of a vast open-cast coal mining area. Jezeří is close to the old villages of Upper Jiřetín and Černice, which nestle in the foothills. But this may not be for long. Neighboring Lower Jiřetín has already been wiped off the map as the mines have spread to extract the region's rich deposits of brown coal, and the two villages could be next in line. The Czech Republic's long-term energy strategy counts on continued brown coal mining. The geographical limits of North Bohemia's open-cast mines were set by the state back in 1991, but now they may be extended, and the residents of Upper Jiřetín and Černice fear they are next in a list of more than 100 villages that have been sacrificed for coal over the last century. But the population of a little over 2,000 are not going to give up without a fight. They voted overwhelmingly for the villages to be preserved in a local referendum at the end of February. Branko Glavica is the mayor of Upper Jiřetín. He himself ended up in the village a few years ago because he was forced to move there after his old village was demolished to make way for the mines.
The mood in the village has been fluctuating. Residents actually started to build new family houses or to renovate their old homes. But then the threat of the open-cast mine reaching our village became quite real. So we held a referendum on whether or not to agree with the planned expansion of the mine. 76% of eligible voters took part, and 96% of them voted against the expansion. Now we, as the local authorities, have to do everything in our power to ensure that the residents' wishes are met. After the referendum, they are more self-confident that the villages will not be demolished.
But so far, the local authorities have been kept in the dark about the future of their villages. The district authorities have yet to forward their proposed regional planning scheme, and the Trade and Industry Ministry has also not made it clear whether or not the mining limits will be extended. The local open-cast mining company Mostecka Uhelna told us that the government has no choice but to extend the limits if it wants to depend on locally produced energy. Its spokeswoman Libyana Novotná.
The state really ought to make its position clear this year. Its energy plan says that in the future, the country should be as self-reliant as possible when it comes to primary energy sources. It also plans to build up Czech energy production mainly on local reserves of brown coal, to reduce the share of foreign energy supplies, oil and natural gas, as much as possible, and reduce the effects of price fluctuation and unstable supplies. So we need the state to say clearly, yes, we're going to re-evaluate the coal mining limits of 1991 and allow mining there and there and there.
The state decided to put strict restrictions on coal mining in 1991 because dozens of villages were demolished by the communist regime to extract northwestern Bohemia's coal deposits. Today, the Trade and Industry Ministry wants to see local energy production grow and new power plants built. But what about the hundreds of families that would have to be displaced? Upper Jiřetín and Černice were in the so-called Sudetenland, and most of the mainly German-speaking inhabitants were made to leave after the Second World War. But since then, several generations have grown up there and have helped to develop and revive the villages, often with their bare hands. Today, the area is full of life, and the idea of the homes, shops, church and square being wiped off the map sends a shiver down your spine, even if you don't live locally.
I, just like most of the residents, took part in the referendum and voted against the displacement. My family has been living here for four generations. This is my home, and I refuse to leave. It's not just a village. It has a church, a square. There is so much cultural heritage that can't simply be demolished or displaced. We don't want to end up like the other villages.
The local pub owner František Štěpán. Mayor Branko Glavica shares Mr. Štěpán's view and stresses that Upper Jiřetín is not just any village. It is a place with invaluable cultural heritage that the region cannot afford to lose.
Last year, the village celebrated its 740th anniversary. Since 1968, the threat has been hanging over us that the village could be wiped out, so we stopped investing in it. We have a church that is of great importance to us. It has beautiful frescoes, but needs to be restored. There are currently two schools for infants and juniors. There's also a local community center, which used to be a really nice hotel. When they demolished Lower Jiřetín, they also took away some of the historic cultural artifacts, such as sculptures from Upper Jiřetín. The sculptural group of St. George, for example. St. George is also on our village emblem, and we would like it back. The Jezeří Chateau is also part of Upper Jiřetín. It is not to be demolished, but if our village were wiped out, the chateau would be surrounded by open-cast mines and isolated from the rest of the world. This is not about whether coal mining is good or bad. 10% of the population work in the local coal mine. It is about the people who have their homes here, whose ancestors lived here, and who have a special bond with this area. We're practically the last village in the foothills of the Krušné Mountains. All others have been wiped out due to coal mining.
Despite the referendum, it is yet unclear whether or not the two villages will be saved. The mining company Mostecka Uhelna says the referendum was held much too soon. Residents should have waited for the mine to put forward a proposal, such as the complete rebuilding of a new village, for example. It also warns residents of the consequences of limited mining, as this could also be bad news for Upper Jiřetín and Černice.
If the limits are not extended, we will have to close down the mining area as early as 2017, and some 2,000 mine employees would lose their jobs, as well as thousands of others who have jobs depending on mining. This would affect the purchasing power of the local residents in the service sector as well as other sectors. If the limits were extended, then mining would continue for dozens of years. The deposits of brown coal are believed to be sufficient for 100 years of mining. If we mine 7 million tons a year, the coal reserves are estimated to amount to a total of some 750 million tons.
Těžitelné zásoby uhlí představují zhruba 750 milionů tun uhlí.
Environmentalists and the Environment Ministry have opposed the state energy strategy, fighting to preserve Upper Jiřetín and Černice. Despite all the effort, they appear to be losing the battle. If the extraction of coal is declared a national interest, the state will have the right to displace people and expropriate land and property.
Dita Asiedu with Czechs Today. And that feature brings us to the end of today's programme. I'd just like to remind you that all our features are accessible in text and sound on Radio Prague's webpage. That's at www.radio.cz. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.